vegan market, Bucky's birthday party? Freaking miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. Like always, Abracadamits, I'm rooting for you, so I hope you guys have had a fantastic week. We have finally made it to Friday, baby. We are here. Lot of crazy things going on in the world. You know, it's no big secret, you know, what's going on in Ukraine. So I just want to say I'm sending prayers and good vibes that way, and really hope things can stop. So yeah, any of you listeners out that way, sending all the good energy, good vibes I possibly can here from the Abracadam Podcast. I do want to give some show dates out here, especially for local listeners. April 9th, I'm going to be at the 1907 Brewery in Morristown, Tennessee. Definitely, you want to come out because we're going to have an Abracadam good time, Morristown. And then April 30th, you can come see my show in Johnson City at the Wallace Theater. And that's going to be an Abracadam good time, too. So, two chances, two shows coming up. You definitely want to come out. Let's hang out. Let's have a good time. And I almost forgot. Almost forgot. The Abracadam is now on Patreon. Yes. So I'm trying to figure this stuff out. But go over to Patreon if you'd like to show some support and love to the podcast. I have three different types of tiers that you can join. One $5, one for $10, and then one for $20. So go check us out at the Abracadam Podcast on Patreon. Danny Whitson, Abracadam. And become a supporter here of the Abracadam Podcast. I'd really appreciate it, and I think you get a lot of bang for your buck. That being said, now let's give a big shout-out for today's sponsor. Okay. Well, today's episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. I've been getting my tattoos done by Rosie for a while now, and I couldn't recommend anyone else because she does excellent work. As a matter of fact, I got an appointment to see Rosie here in just a few weeks, and I cannot wait to get my ink therapy done, baby. Rosie gets free consultations by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. Shoot her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Give Rosie a call today at 865-281-3451. Or go see Rosie at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your ink therapy done. You know you want a tattoo. Go see Rosie Tattoos. All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest is, he's funny. Yes. Definitely, probably, you know, I love seeing his pictures on Facebook because they're absolutely hilarious. So you will have to follow him to know what I'm talking about. His punny jokes are funny as well. But he has a very interesting resume, a history with, David Letterman. Yes. And so, I definitely had to get him on the podcast. So, if you will, Abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with comedy magician, Jeff Williams. All right, I'm excited. We got comedy magician Jeff Williams here on the Abracadam Podcast today. How you doing, Jeff?
I am fantastic. Thank you very much for inviting me, Dan.
I tell you what, Jeff, if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Okay. Well, let's see. I'm 5'9". I have hazel eyes. And I have my hair professionally thinned. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm bald and loving it. My promo pictures have not changed for the last two decades. It's amazing. I right out of high school, I toured Europe with an acting troupe. So I discovered theater in high school, as well as interpretive, you know, types of comedy and that sort of thing. I was doing speech competitions and things like that, which was so much fun. And I really started to get into writing comedy and that sort of thing. I tried regular stuff. It just didn't work for me at all. So right out of high school, acting troupe through Europe, and then came back, went to college at Western Illinois University, and I got to study under Eugene Kozlowski. So those people out there who are big into acting who probably know that name. It was that really got me very, very interested in theater. And then I never really lived in a town that had a magic shop. And so I moved to Tucson, Arizona, and John Alexander's magic shop was there. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've always loved special effects in movies. And in many cases, I thought they were more interesting than the movies themselves. And so I got to see my very first live magic show, which had some heavy hitters there in the Tucson area, John Schrock and Alan Rasko and Adrian Van Vactor. And I got involved with, you know, Eric Buss and all of these other, you know, comedy magic powerhouse guys there. And it just took off. I mean, after I saw that magic show, the first live magic show, 3 years later, I ended up president of the club. I couldn't stop. It was that can of worms thing. And so I found out I had an aptitude for magic. Not that I was so talented, but I've got near infinite patience. So I can take however long I need to learn something. And it turns out that is really important when it comes to sleight of hand. And then the comedy writing stuff happened. I wrote for David Letterman for top 10 lists between 1997 and 2009, but it was all freelance. So I was, you know, they would, they had this online contest where, you know, they would put out this top 10 topic and you had to do submissions for it. And I kept winning. And so they said, you know, you've got Letterman's voice. We hear, when we read your stuff, we can hear David saying it. So anyway, they tapped me for that and started sending me everything from, you know, ideas to, you know, themes. And then they would say, you know, I would just be free to send them whatever I decided to come up with on my own.
Well, you know, let me ask you this real quick. Okay. Because, okay. Sure. Now it sounds like you were kind of a late bloomer than in magic for magicians. Cause you know, most magicians, I've been doing card tricks since I was 4, you know, with the magic kit.
I was 28.
Yeah. Wow. So even later than me. I didn't probably get into magic till around 18, 19, you know, 20-ish, you know, in my early 20s or late teens, you know. So that was, 28 years old, Jeff. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was doing a lot of writing and I was doing, you know, some stand up and I was doing some theater stuff, you know, all that time. But it was when I discovered the magic, it was all of a sudden, okay, now I can amaze somebody, hopefully make them laugh. And then found out that if you make them laugh, you can get, you know, away with the sneaky stuff during that laugh moment.
That's right.
So I also train. I have a class that I do with magicians on how and why to use comedy in your magic and how to craft a joke and what, you know, what makes up humor and why people laugh and that sort of thing. And what happens when people laugh, I think, is more interesting.
You know, I would agree with you. You know, it's a, okay, you know, a common method that we do use in magic is like attention and release. And a lot of times on the release moment is whenever, boom, that's when the dirty work will take place all the times. Nothing to tip off to you listeners. But and one of the things with laughter, the tension is released. You know, there's a moment of vulnerability for people when they're laughing. I definitely take advantage of that situation in my show. Now, but let me ask you this, because you do have it's like a variety of skills that you have learned that has brought you to where you are today. Let's push back though real quick to the acting. I'll tell you this, a lot of entertainers sometimes that are not actors, comics, and then later on they
they get into movies and they do well because, you know, we do act on stage. You know, a lot of times we're saying things on stage to make it sound like we've said it the first time in entire life, you know, and you know what the case is there. But I have just here in the past couple of years began acting. And I'm starting to look at things a lot different and the respect that goes into it when you see real actors. You know what I mean? And so how has that, I mean, I can imagine it's helped you out a lot, but, you know, whenever you were on stage, the stage presence and whatnot.
Right. In fact, you see so many people who get into magic and then they put on a show and they do some of the, you know, the primary things that you should never, ever do, you know. They don't realize there's an upstage and a downstage and not to turn your back on the audience and to project so the last person in the room can hear you. And those are just like super minor things. But even how you enter, you know, is so critical. And you don't really get that until you start doing, you know, some serious study with some people who really know what they're doing. And I was very fortunate with that. So when I got involved with magic, I had a lot of the hard stuff done. It turned out that the magic trick itself was relatively simple, but selling it was what was the hard part, and then selling it properly. And so it was I thoroughly enjoyed that. In fact, stagecraft is one of my all-time favorite things. I love, how can I make this character better? You know, work on the, because my character is not, it's sort of an exaggeration of myself, but it's really a goofy guy. He kind of almost doesn't understand the magic that's happening around him. And, you know, when he's pulling the pieces of newspaper out of different pockets, he's trying to locate an article about him. And he starts by saying, you know, it was a full page. It wasn't a full page article. It was like half, not really half. It was kind of a quarter panel kind of, and it gets all the way down to where it was just my first name. Right. And I'm excited to show that to the audience and I can't find it. And so I go back in my head. It's like, okay, now wait a second. What? I was in the kitchen. I had the scissors. I had the newspaper. And that's when the phone rang and I never got this stuff cut out. And that's when all the pieces go back into the newspaper. So he doesn't even realize that the pieces have gone back into a newspaper. He's now looking for his name in the paper and he goes, oh yeah, here it is right there. It says Jeff right there. Ah, dang, they misspelled it even. Because I'm a G-E-O-F-F. Yeah. So I get a little extra laugh, but my character is a bit of an idiot. I mean, he's not stupid, he's just not real street smart, you know. And so I want to add, and that's, you know, hopefully nothing quite like me, although I do have a really kind of a bizarre, you know, side to myself. I like writing for this character because I think he's an extremely funny guy. Now some people don't get it maybe, and that's okay. The people who do get it, those are my peeps, and so I try to make sure that, you know, they're the ones having
it. We all have our audience. You know, we have that one audience. And I'll tell you the one thing that always cracks me up about you, Jeff. I love this. And it never, ever, I it always gets me. I always smile. At least I always smile when you do this. Is whenever you post those pictures on Facebook where you're with a fan or somebody's at the show and there's that wave and it's covering your entire face. That is the greatest thing.
Oh, thanks.
I love that.
Thanks. I got over 500 pictures of famous people. I mean, senators and movie stars and singers and a lot of magicians waving to the camera with their hands and obscuring my face. And it's that took off and it just got, you know, it became its own thing. People now, when they get their picture taken with me, they go, can I put my hand in your face? And it's like, absolutely.
That is the greatest.
Yeah, it really is, you know, because I don't care what I look like. You know, I want the star.
The thing that's so brilliant about that is like your trademark, man. That is your thing now. you know? So if somebody in the world, anybody in the world has seen, you know, Jeff Williams' show and they see that, they're going to think, did you get your picture made with him? Oh yeah. Awesome. With the hand in front of the face. That's hilarious. I was just talking to a friend yesterday and this is one of my pet peeves. And I don't know why this bugs me, but I can't stand this. But whenever you see somebody get a picture with a celebrity, and no offense to anybody who does this, but this just annoys the hell out of me, is whenever you see the celebrity and he's pointing at the person like, look at this guy. No, this is the real guy right here. Look at the, it's so kind of condescending, kind of, I don't like it, you know? And but whenever I see yours, this is like, this is the complete opposite. This is like, hey, you know, I'm a moron. This is a good pick. You know what I mean? I love it. I think it's the best, man.
Well, I'm the butt of the joke. And exactly. I think that's really what's funny is that I'm the guy who is getting his, you know, his face obscured because apparently that person is so happy to be, you know, having the picture taken that they're waving hi to the camera. And to be the butt of the joke, I think, is really very, very important.
Where did that idea, what made you come up with that idea? What was, do you have the first picture you ever took of that? Do you remember?
The very first time I ever did this was actually on my wedding day. And it's a fantastic picture. We're out on the beach and I'm standing there and my wife, my new wife now, is off to the side and she has her veil and she's leaning backwards in this wonderful, just gorgeous thing. She's leaning back and the veil is blowing in the wind and it's right across my face. You can't even tell it's me, right? But it goes right across. And it took us like 12 or 15 shots because the wind was blowing and we had to get it just right. And so when we got it, it's like, yes, that's it. That's it. Because everybody knows weddings are all about the woman. It's really not about the guy. The guy is there to hold the woman's hand while everybody oogles her. And that guys, you know, get over it. That's exactly what it is. Yep, that's it. I didn't write that. I didn't make that up. That's just the way life is. So I wanted to make it about her. In fact, we shot some other ones as well where she's standing there and it's like a Harlequin romance cover, you know, where I'm at her feet, you know, grabbing her leg and looking up at her adoringly sort of thing. And she's sort of standing there with her hands on her hips in a, you know, super human type pose, looking off into the sunset. And it just was that role reversal thing. So anyway, as soon as the veil went across my face, I thought, this is important. I got to do something with this. And I mulled it around for a while. And then David Acker in his book, he's a Canadian actor, comedy magician, buddy of mine. He, in his book, More Power to You, had a picture with him and Max Maven. So for those of you who don't know who Max Maven is, he's one of the top mentalists in the world. You've probably seen him on television, World's Greatest Magic, that kind of thing. And he's got this severe widow's peak, right? Well, David is smiling at the camera and waving and obscuring Max's face.
Whoa.
And it's a hilarious picture. But I'm thinking, no, it should be the other way around because there are a lot of people who don't know that that was Max Maven. Now, the widow's peak gives it away to most magicians, but if Max had had his hand waving high with David's face obscured, you know, that would have been a better role reversal because the picture really is about the other guy.
Yeah.
Not, you know. And so I said, I just figured it out. David Acker gave me the solution to what I'd been wanting was how do I obscure my face and keep that theme type of thing going? And so I just reversed that. And now I let other people, and I'll tell them, put your hand in my face like you're waving hi to the camera. And Japanese are the sweetest people on the planet because I was at a magic conference and I was trying to get them to do that. And they don't want to, you know, diss you in any way whatsoever. They don't want to dishonor you. They don't want to do anything that would be anything detrimental to you. And I said, you know, just put your hand in my face. Oh, no, I could never do that. I could. And so I would have to stop, get my phone out, go through all of these pictures. And they're like, oh, okay, so it's a theme. Yes, it is. And then they were happy to do it. But I tell you what, those people are just too nice, you know, and you Asians out there, you all know who you are. You're just the most wonderful people on the planet, you know, and God love you. I wish everybody was as polite, you know.
Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah, but I tell you what, I know it's going to be an uphill battle to sometimes get some people to put their hand in my face. And others are, other people are just too happy to, just because they think it's, you know, really funny. And when they see the picture, they're like, oh, I got to have a copy of that.
So, oh, that's great. Every time I see them on Facebook, I die laughing. I'm like, oh, man, that's great.
A lot of people have that kind of thing. In fact, Amazing Jonathan, who just died the other day.
Yeah.
He had one that he would always look up like, geez, I'm with this loser. And that was his look. And I've noticed it in a whole bunch of photos. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, I never totally noticed it until now. But that was his thing.
Well, I noticed that yesterday, too. I noticed, you know, because a lot of people were posting their pictures with him. And he always had that. He made that purpose. You know, of course, he's doing it on purpose. But that annoying look like, oh, gosh. I don't know. I know this isn't original. I just don't know what to do because I always feel like a dork. You know, people want their pictures after a show. And of course I do it, but I always feel, so I always make like this, you know, like big mouth, you know, idiot looking face just because that's how I feel anyways, you know, but I think what you have now is the best. It is the best thing.
Thanks. I got buddies who do it. Michael Kaminskis. Tells people to be on their phone, and then he stands beside them. He stands beside them with his arm around them, and he's like super happy to get his picture taken with them. And they look like they could really have nothing to do with him. Martin Cox from England has got one where he stands directly 90 degrees from the camera, facing them deadpan, like he's just staring at them in a very creepy way, and you know, not. Not evil, but just sort of like, does he even realize where he's at kind of thing? Those are really funny. They start to get funny. And David Regal does where people are choking him.
Oh, yeah. David Regal does the choking thing. Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know how he gets some people to do that because I'm sure they're wondering, is this going to be a legal thing?
We're going to be blackmailed.
My favorite, though, is with David. I'm choking him and he's got his hand up in front of me.
Oh, that is awesome.
At the same time.
Is that on Facebook?
It's got to be. If not, I can send it to you. It's
my
all-time favorite one. Yeah.
I had David on here a few episodes back. Man, what a wonderful guest he is.
Isn't he wonderful?
Such a smart man. And I mean, and you know, he had a lot of cool, you know, stories to talk about, you know, being a writer on television shows and writing comedy. Well, speaking of comedy, let's do this because, okay, you started out in acting. Now, where did the comedy come in at? Was it magic or was it comedy first? Which one kind of rolled in with you first?
Comedy first.
Okay.
Yep.
So you started writing comedy. Did you do any stand-up, any improv, anything like that? Or?
Stand-up, improv. I mean, anytime I could possibly – I wrote a movie I can't even talk about because the guy who I wrote it for died. It was going to be for Marty Feldman, and it was going to be a sequel to Kung Fu.
Okay.
So, yeah, anyway, it was,
this was back in the day when you wrote this, correct? Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, comedy writing is, that's where my heart's at. So,
what's interesting is, you know, for me, magic came first and then comedy came, you know, thereafter. And there was a period of time where I didn't do any magic at all on stage. I was just doing stand-up to learn stand-up, you know, to learn how to do stand-up. And now, that you know, my show is a combination of both magic and stand-up, but I love writing jokes just as much as I love learning tricks, you know, or doing, you know... So it's like I love both the same now. I love sitting down and just working out a joke on paper, you know, or trying to come up with stuff like that. So the comedy writing is, and then there's sketches and a lot of that fun stuff that when, you know, you got things in your head that's been running around there for a few years and you got to get it out. So that's kind of like what you did next. It was the comedy portion.
Yep, definitely. In fact, through the pandemic, one of the funnest times I've been having is I do a pun a day on Facebook. So if you're one of my Facebook friends, you've been assaulted with way too many puns from me. And they're all original. I've been writing them. I've written over 4,500.
That nice. I've posted.
Yeah, and since 2014, I think, is when I started doing it. But now it's a matter of how to craft a pun. I never thought that puns were that funny until a friend of mine, John Archer, turned me on to Tim Vine from England, also from England, as John is. And Tim's entire show is puns.
Nice.
First, I started kind of smirking and then laughing. And then after a while, I just had tears rolling out. And I realized the reason why puns are funny is if you know a pun is coming, if it didn't catch you off guard. And so now people expect the puns from me. And so they know that when I even tell it's Jeff's pun of the day. In my stage show, my 55 and older community show, I have the magic stuff happens in the middle. The comedy magic happens in the middle. On stage left is a sign that says puns only. And I'll walk over there and rip off 5, 6, 7 puns and then come back to the middle. And it's like a whole different show. And then on stage right is a guitar that is in a special stand that holds it up in playable condition. And because I'm a guitar player as well. And I will then play really stupid songs. I mean,
I love really, it.
But they're super brief. And so it's kind of become this variety show.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Comedy is the common element in all three things. But you got magic in the middle. You got pure comedy on the left. You got comedy and music on the right. And it's for me, that's what I love, is just being able to do the comedy and weave it into different areas.
The way you've structured that is very interesting, because one of the most difficult things, I think, for anybody who combines two things, like magic and comedy and stuff, is making the two work and work with each other, not feel forced, not like you don't want them 1 minute like seeing the magic and now here comes these jokes. We're like, what's going on? You don't want to throw the audience off, which can happen. But the way you've done this is brilliant. It's like they are truly witnessing the show, and the way you've got it separated like that is awesome. It's no way it's going to confuse the audience.
No, that's true. In fact, after a while, because since I did find out, watching Tim's, and go see Tim Vine on YouTube, absolutely hilarious. You won't get some of the jokes because some of them are going to be British.
I like a lot of British humor. I do. Now, sometimes, like, I'm a big Tommy Cooper fan. So,
my heart.
Mine too, man. Sometimes I get annoying to my friends because I send them all these Tommy Cooper clips,
Oh, I have all three of John Fisher's books on Tommy Cooper. Just one line after another. They're absolutely hilarious.
Gosh, I'm a big, but who you said this guy was? Tim Vine is his name?
Tim Vine.
Yep. Okay.
And absolutely wonderful. But that's where I learned that, like I said, if you know it's a pun that's coming, it's infinitely funnier. And so I put the sign up on stage left, and about 2/3 of the way through the show, I'll look over at the sign and start walking towards it, and I will get laughs that start to happen because people know now it's going to be a pun that happens. And I think the puns are stronger if people know it's a pun rather than, the boom, sort of
absolute
rim shot, roll the eyes kind of thing, which they may do on the first few. But after a while, you can't help it. It's a pun coming. And so you've automatically gotten past the punniness of the thing. And now you have to rate it on how good of a pun was it. And, the object is to craft the best pun. And that's hard because you're working with beats. You're working with the cadence of things. And just like you do in regular, stand-up.
I think that's also interesting too, because sometimes there's a challenge where the audience doesn't know what to expect, and you have to get over that hurdle as well. You have to get them kind of familiar and used to you. And the fact that, like I said, you know, they know something ridiculous is on its way when you're walking towards that, the pun sign, the pun spark. Mm-hmm. So, oh, yeah. Absolutely. And that totally makes sense, too, because there's a lot of times whenever you have heard a pun joke and you weren't expecting it, and you're like, you know, you got a few minutes, you're trying to figure out what's going on, you know. So, mm-hmm. but whenever you know something's coming down the pipeline, absolutely. I totally agree with you. Now, you said, now, this is when you threw at me here. And, folks, for you guys that cannot see this video, this conversation, Jeff has a bunch of guitars in the background. So it's clear that this man does pick the guitar. So not only do we got acting, we've got comedy, we've got magic, and apparently we've got music. So let's take it easy a little bit on the talent there, Jeff, okay?
I'm also a part-time lion tamer, and I can install plumbing. So
comedy, you went out there, you said you did some stand-up, some improv, a lot of that stuff, learned it. And then later on, what was it, a magic shop? What gave you the magic bug?
Oh, God.
I think you said something about a magic shop. Was it in was it Tucson?
Yeah, it was John Alexander's in Tucson, Arizona. I remember seeing magic way back, and this is going to tell you, you know, show you how old I really am. I saw Fantasio on Ed Sullivan.
Oh, you know, wow.
I got to see Fantasio do it, you know, and he pulled, you know.
His first candle. Cloth.
I saw him do an entire candelabra from nowhere, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, because this is back in the days, this is all live television. This is not, you know, edited kind of stuff back then. Now that you can edit all the stuff that you want, it's kind of out of hand. But back then, it was everything you saw on TV was real, you know, and you could a lot of times see the wires on the old, you know, science fiction type shows and things. It was pretty bad. But the Ed Sullivan stuff, it was incredible. I remember seeing Fantasio and I thought, that's unbelievable. Later on, I ended up getting the Mark Wilson book, Mark Wilson's Complete Course in Magic. And I tell you what, if you have a budding magician in your family, that's a great gift, because it does a very, very wide variety of everything. I absolutely love that. And like I said, I was really into the special effects in movies more than the movies themselves, for the most part. Used to get Fangoria magazine.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, and it would show you how they did the monster makeup, which was so much better than the movies were usually stupid looking for a lot of them. But the makeup, how they would apply the different things, it was really fascinating. And so when I showed up in Tucson, I thought, there's a magic shop. Gotta go. I've only seen magic on television. I've seen David Copperfield do specials and stuff like that, but I've never seen anything live. And John Alexander, he just fried my brain. It was so much fun. And I thought, okay, I'm buying this, and that. I'm going to go play. And we're going to have a lot of fun. And then ultimately I gravitated away from the, you know, here's this box that does this thing, to here's a deck of cards, and you can, you know, then take the sleight of hand stuff and be able to do things that if people said, here, use my cards, gladly. You know, now we'll segue into that and have fun, because I didn't have my little lacquered box with me. I couldn't do the magic. And I really thought that was so much fun. I just, like I said, I've got a lot of patience. And I ended up working at another Williams, not related to me, but Emery Williams magic shop in Tucson, because they had two there. I would work there on Sunday afternoons, and they paid me the product.
You know, oh, my gosh, that was a magician's dream.
Yeah, well, it was great for them, because, you know, they have the little, you know, the ball and vase, and they have the color vision box, and they have all the little stuff that, you know, you can buy. And then I would be doing tricks out of the books and out of the videos, and then people would say, well, how much is that trick? And I'd go, well, it's that book over there by John Bannon or by Di Vernon or, you know, whoever. And they would end. So they loved me because I was selling the stuff that they weren't selling. I was selling the books that say, oh, this trick is in there. Plus there's 100 other tricks in that book. And they're like, oh, you kidding me? Okay, I'll spend $30 for that. So they loved me. And I built up this giant library now that I've got in my house on magic stuff just from working there, and loved it. I did that for several years.
Man, that would have been so awesome to get. You know, a real similar situation. You know, it was a brick and mortar shop that got me, a magician got me hooked. I didn't get to work there though, but still awesome. Now let's back this up because I want to say this real quick. You said you used to get Fangoria magazine, but have you went? Okay, you remember the movies, especially the early 80s, late 70s horror movies, and the makeup job that was going on there. And one of the most famous scenes that I'm sure you remember was American Werewolf in London, when he's turning into the werewolf.
Yeah, Rick Baker did that.
Well, if you go back and watch that, it looks horrible now.
<You know? laughs> Yeah, some of it doesn't stand up too well. Although Rick Baker's stuff, for the most part, is pretty solid. I mean, some of the mechanical stuff that he was doing with the makeup and all. Like the first, not the first, but the remake of the Kurt Russell, The Thing.
Oh my gosh! Now The Thing, I think that one does.
That one hurts you pretty bad. Yeah. Anyway, that's more Rick Baker. So the American Werewolf in London was, I believe, almost his first film. And so, yeah, he was pretty experimental on a lot of stuff there.
And back then, though, it was scared the hell out of me as a child, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, you know, great back then. But I guess the kind of memories that I still had, and I went back and looked, and I was like, well, you know, compared to, you know, the. But I would almost rather still have the makeup and, you know, the mechanical effects than to have some CGI stuff. I'm not a big CGI fan. I'm not really my thing.
Yeah. No, I've seen some really bad CGI and thought, well, there was money wasted.
Oh yeah. It's you know, pretty bad. Well, let me ask you this, since we're kind of somewhat on the past and the future type topic here. So with this past, these past few years have been so drastically tough on everyone, but especially entertainers. And, you know, it's no secret. As soon as things happened, magicians were scrambling to figure out a way to put together a virtual show. That way they could sell themselves virtually. I've done a few virtual shows. Not my favorite show to do. Some magicians love doing them, but I love a live audience. I love that energy that a live audience portrays, and which it doesn't seem like it's just not the same virtually. What's your take on it? How did the pandemic treat you? Did you do any virtual shows or?
Yeah, I did quite a few. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I had to be confident in my comedy to know when to hold for the laughs, because I couldn't hear the laughs.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, so I would say a line and I would pause knowing, okay, I hope they're laughing. And I would get several people, they have the little blocks on the screen there. And if I saw people, you know, with their heads rolling back and their mouths open, I'm like, okay, so that guy's laughing. Let's just use him as the litmus, you know, for this whole thing. And so I was entertaining one person, you know, the entire time, or two people is what I felt. But, you know, I wasn't doing a lot of brand new material just for that reason, because I wanted to make sure I wasn't stepping on lines and doing things that, you know, I shouldn't be doing. So it was a little bit odd. But it's, I tell you what, there's nothing like a live show. There's nothing like
nothing at all.
That's probably how it all started for me, was first grade. And it was show and tell day. And I'm having breakfast that morning going, I got nothing. Okay. I'm 6 years old. I obviously put it off to the last second. And there was a Porky Pig mask on the back of the cereal box. So I go, Mom, cut that out. I'm taking that. So she put a string on it and everything. And I walked up to the front of the class when it was my turn, stuck this Porky Pig mask on, and just stood there. I think I put my hands behind me and rocked back and forth, sort of a Porky Pig-like, you know, body language type thing. And the room roared. They loved it. And at that moment, I thought, you know, I could get used to this. And I think that's really what it was, where everything started, was if people are laughing, I don't care if I fool them. I probably will. And I certainly hope that I do. But that's the bottom line, is I want people walking away going, I just can't breathe. I've had the best time. That was so much fun. I did a couple of things I remember, but the rest of the time it's kind of a blur because I was just having too much of a good time. That to me is kind of my goal.
Gosh, I'm with you 100% on that. And I'm not by no means am I tugging my own horn, not at all. But I got to say, the greatest compliment I ever had, Jeff, was a guy came up to me after my show and he said, I lost my voice from laughing so hard. And I looked at Antoinette, my wife, and I was like, that's it. That's the greatest compliment I will ever hear the entire rest of my life.
That's a fantastic, a great compliment. You want to use that in your promo stuff.
I'm with you on that, man. I know exactly how you feel with that. That is absolutely correct. Well, let's do this, though, because I do want to talk. I want to talk some about the magic. I think you were talking about a newspaper tear effect that you do in your show that really sounds totally original. You know, you're looking for your name in each page, piece, you know, until you find it, very small, very funny. Now, do you think, because you were already an entertainer before you found magic, a lot of cases that doesn't happen. A lot of cases, you know, people find magic and then they have to learn to be an entertainer. So do you think that kind of helped you out in your process with magic as well, like already knowing acting and comedy?
Oh, 1,000%, because it really, you can get 4 or 5 people who are buying things from a magic shop, but are you going to present it according to the instructions that came with it? Or are you going to go off the beaten path and do something a little different? Are you going to put a tiny spin on it? Or are you going to throw those instructions away and just completely, you know, work on it from scratch? That separates all of the different performers, really. And I think having the theatrical background and the comedy writing background to start with was huge, because I think that's actually harder than the magic, if you want to know the actual truth. As far as the physical stuff, it's trying to get and craft that part properly so that people don't go, oh, yeah, I've seen this before. You never want to get to the point where they've seen it before.
That's true. That's true. I agree with you. I mean, one thing I love to do, in some ways, this is why I've also explained to people, in some ways, magicians are kind of like musicians, to where we cover tricks, you know, but the point is that we want to make them our own. We want to give our own version of that trick. And I think one of the most funnest and things that you could ever do with a magic trick is throw away those instructions. Don't read someone else's story, you know, figure out a way to present it how you would present it, you know. And
I completely agree. Yeah.
When I love to do
it. When I work the Magic Castle out in Hollywood, I'll go out there and hang with my good buddy, Eric Buss.
Oh, yeah. And he's a creative god, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. Well, other people are doing card stabs up in the air with a sword. He's doing it downwards with a pogo stick. I mean, he likes to go in the opposite direction of everyone else. And it's so inspiring to be around creative types like that. And I got to meet and hang out with Eric a lot because he's from Tucson. And so I got to be with him and John Schrock, who's also another dynamo of talent, a bunch of other people who are really, really strong writers and performers. And I think that's important. Surround yourself with creative people and use that time to bounce ideas off of them and make it kind of a, you know, little think tank.
you know, one of my favorite comedy magicians working today. And this is the thing. I almost, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan and I love the guy to death. But I see his comedy creativity on stage and I get jealous. That's how good this guy is. And you know what I'm talking about when you, it's a good jealous, but you get, you're like, gosh, what did I wish I would have thought of that, you know? And that's, Roon Khan, you know?
Oh, Roon's great.
Oh my gosh. Have you seen his, billiard ball, routine?
I have. Yeah.
Is that brilliant?
Yeah, it really is amazing. I actually have a Roon Khan thing in my stage show. I'm not going to talk about it, but it, yeah, I admire what he does. And it's unfortunate that most of the people listening to this are probably never, ever going to get to see him perform.
He's such a big deal overseas. And I mean, I put him right now, honestly, if we had a top five comedy magicians in the world right now working, he's in the list, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
he's in the list
there. And one of my new favorite ones is Hockenberg.
I have.
Are you familiar? Oh, it's, yeah, it's a Hakan, I think is his first name, and his last name is Berg. He's been on like America's Got Talent, and they didn't know what to think of him when he started, and they were all on their feet at the end. He bills himself as the king of birds, and he does birds. But they're all fake. All the birds he's got, they're just, it's hilarious. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but.
Is he American?
Nope. He's from Norway.
Norway. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's Norway. And so, I mean, some of my Norwegian magician friends could probably correct me on that, but I think he's from Norway. Absolutely. It's hilarious. It's so funny, but he's one of the new ones out there. And I think people need to watch that. And another one is Nick DeFott.
And yes.
Nick is, I remember Nick, he came up through when I was in Minnesota. I lived there for 15 years and I got to help out with the Society of Young Magicians group that met in St. Paul every month. And he was a member there. I remember him doing magic when he was like 7. And he was hilarious then. And now he's a big name doing cruise ships in Vegas and stuff. And he looks like he's 12 still, but an absolute powerhouse. Anyway, he's one of my favorite.
I've heard a lot of great things about Nick. Heck, might try to get him on the show sometime. Let's do this with you, Jeff. So it was easy. It helped you out being a funny guy, being an actor, you know, getting into magic. So you were able to kind of structure, you know, and get your own show going. But let me ask you this, because we just talked about a lot of fantastic comedy magicians, but what magician had the biggest impact on you? Who would you say was had the biggest impact on you overall?
It more than likely, as far as comedy magicians, I would have to say that it was Tom Mullica.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and David Williamson.
Oh my gosh, yes. Gee.
Both of them taught me that you didn't have to sacrifice the magic for the comedy, and you didn't have to sacrifice the comedy for the magic. So I felt that was a really important thing. They're very dissimilar in their styles, but absolutely, I could watch either of those guys forever, and I've been very lucky to have shared the stage with both of them. So, you know, I'm ready to clock out now.
That is awesome.
I look back on it thinking, oh my God, did I really do it? It's freakish, you know, that you can actually meet our heroes, which we can do in magic. You could never do that if you were a movie star. Well, no, if you liked being an actor in a, you know, say community theater production, you'd never be able to go out to eat with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
If you were a singer, you'd never be able to actually go out and hang for an entire weekend with Celine Dion. You can't do it. It just, but we can as magicians. We have these conventions and we get to meet our heroes and hang with them and buy them a drink and go out to dinner with them and hang and say, am I doing this right? And get personalized instruction. It's crazy. No other art form does that. And I kind of leave, you know what? We're lucky just to be doing this.
You know, I'll never forget. So you never forget when you see David Williamson perform, because especially if you haven't been prepared to what's going to happen, it's, you know, I've even compared his performing style. It's almost kind of like it's got a Robin Williams anarchy feel to it. You know, he's, you know, running out and grabbing a kid and rolling him up in a carpet. And I mean, just what's going on right now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
David Williamson really is. He is a, and I was lucky enough to meet him. Super nice man. And yeah. Just definitely one of my favorites too. I have to put that out there. And you're right. David Williamson's magic is top notch. It's top notch, you know, great card stuff. Great card stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. He has incredible skill that you'll never get to see because everything is hidden so beautifully. The guy he doesn't rely on his comedy and then do like self-working tricks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not,
no, he's like got this, skills.
Yeah. And he's not like the super insane, you know, Vernon style of talent, and then trying to shoehorn old hackneyed jokes in to try to make it funny. You know, he's just a beautiful blend of incredible skill on whether he opens his mouth or moves his hands. He's brilliant.
That is the truth. Now, let me ask you this. I want to get back on this because it's a really interesting part. The David Letterman. The joke writing. So this was just something that you just kind of put out there and you just kept winning. So it was like a comedy writing contest thing. Is that what happened?
Yep. They had it every week. And I kept getting picked for it. And then they nabbed me and said that you've got Letterman's voice and we want to give you a chance to be able to see what you can do. And so they gave me some topics, that kind of thing. And I never sent them a top 10 list. It was always a 30, you know, or 35 list kind of thing. And then they would hone it down. And if they liked it, that was great. They would, you know, buy it from me. If they didn't, then that was great as well. It became a wonderful exercise for me.
Was it good money? Did they pay good money for the jokes, or was it, you know, still happy to sell jokes?
People aren't listening, but it wasn't great money, you know, by any, you know, it was more, I got more out of just, you know, the feeling that Letterman is saying my words that I wrote.
Absolutely, you know, man. Well, that credit is gold, Jeff. That's a credit right there that's worth
it. And I shouldn't say this, you know, they didn't have to pay me because if they just said, we'll make sure that Dave says this, you know, and nobody knew that was mine. It was kind of weird, you know, because I'm not in any of the credits or anything because they would just buy it from me and it would be theirs.
Well, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. I got to ask you this. Okay. This is what every entertainer, every comic is wondering who is listening to this. What was it like that first time when you heard David Letterman on television tell one of your jokes?
I just sat there and just, you know, smiled and just thought, okay, God, you can take me now because, you know, I can't see, you know, that it getting, you know, better than that. And of course, you know, now I'm doing my own jokes. I get to say them myself. So it doesn't have quite the power that Dave had, but still, you know, that was wonderful. There were a lot of freelance guys out there though. So I'm not what I would consider rare, but there's probably, you know, I think most people listening probably didn't write for Letterman. So I'm in a minority, but still, there's a lot more of them out there than what a lot of people think.
Well, here's something, and this is the truth. This is absolutely the truth. Entertainers, we do need validation. We do. And it's something, I don't know what it is with us, but it's something we do crave. And that right there, Jeff, is one of the ultimate validations right there, brother, that somebody like Dave Letterman thinks you're funny enough to tell your jokes on his show. So That's awesome, man.
Well, thanks. And it, you know, in all fairness, and this is going to sound a little on the weird side, but it wasn't just David saying the lines. But when the audience roared, then I think that was the finale. That was the, because if they had not done anything, if it had been this solid
thing, bombed,
I would have gone, dang, I'm so glad they didn't mention my name attached to that. You know, but I got very lucky. I mean, the people that David had working for him who filtered that stuff through to him, because he doesn't actually pick it. They pick it for him, and then I think he does a little bit of editing after he gets a hold of the stuff, but not a lot, because his people rely on him, and they worked back and forth very, very, very tightly. It's very nice. So it was nice that it would show up in such a format that when Dave, you know, delivered it in the way that he did and the audience roared, that was the, okay, I'm in. I felt good.
That is awesome. Well, let's do this, okay? Because we've been talking about good times here on the Abracadam podcast. But Jeff Williams, yes, every entertainer who comes on this show has to tell a hell gig story. Jeff Williams, let's hear your hell gig story.
Oh, gosh. I have too many. But the one that stands out was one that just chilled me to the bone. And I was doing a lecture tour through Europe. And I was headed to Italy first to do a magic convention there. And this was in the early 2000s. So cell phones were not that prevalent. And I knew the name of my contact person. That was it. So I was going to be showing up in Bologna. Actually, it was in Milan is where I ended up at this one point. It's one of the largest train stations in the entire world. So I show up there, pull in on a train, and I realize, I don't know if my guy who's picking me up is going to be outside waiting in a car, circling, waiting for this American to come out with his couple, you know, few bags, or is he going to be looking for me in the station as well, which is the size of a football field. And so now I'm thinking, I'm in a foreign country. I don't speak Italian at all. I speak some Spanish, but that's because I spent a year in Venezuela, you know, this kind of thing. And it's like, it doesn't really translate very well. And I'm thinking, I'm really hurting now. I could be here this time tomorrow. You know, that's a really bad situation for real. And I'm thinking, what do I do? What do I do? So I pulled out a deck of cards and started shooting cards up into the air and catching them and started drawing a little bit of a crowd. So then I started going around and finding Americans that I could see, and I started playing off of them. I'd have other people, you know, peek at a card, this type of thing. And it all became busking for some strange reason. And I'm not a busker. I don't work the streets, you know. And I had this group. It got to be about 20, 25 people around me because I was making more commotion than everything else around, and they weren't going anywhere. And this guy was doing fans, and this guy comes right through the audience, the little break. He came walking right up to me, and he said, "I'm so glad you did that." And he was my guy. That's how they found me, was by me drawing a crowd. As I thought, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that otherwise I would just sit there and wet my pants and just cry. I'd still be there, okay? I would never have gotten out. I would be living in the train station if magic hadn't saved my life. So I'm forever grateful for having a deck of cards.
What an awesome solution to your problem. That's thinking on your feet as a magician. That is, wow, using your powers for good, Jeff Williams. That was smart.
Well, I hope I never have to do it again, but if you're ever stuck in a foreign place and you got to get out, then that's a good...
Put on a street show, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, yeah, you know, yeah. Draw a crowd. People will notice you, and the authorities will come and rescue you. Maybe.
As a magician, okay, Jeff Williams, let's say that you wake up and you find yourself stranded on a desert island. On this island, there is indigenous people, but they're holding their spears at your throat. And you have to come up with one magic trick to convince them not to kill you. What magic trick do you use?
And I got nothing on me.
You got to get creative, brother. Well, I will say this. Nick Lewin, and I always bring this up, Nick Lewin somehow surprisingly had a deck of cards on him and showed an ambitious card trick. So if you've got a deck of cards on you, fine. But if you want to get creative, get creative.
I might go kind of all slidini on him and bring the chief over and do river stones over the head. And I have also, because of Mayor Yedid, who's a friend of mine, I do a vanishing ring finger thing where it's completely gone. And you can see it's completely gone. It's gone. Oh, wait. And I'll grab somebody else's finger and put it on there. And then all of a sudden have my finger come back. If they think, you know, that's if they don't kill me instantly thinking that I'm the devil. So there is an issue there. So maybe the river stones would help, because everybody else, you know, gets in on the trick except the person that you're working for. So I would probably end up going with that one first. But then if they ask, do something else, I would make my ring finger completely disappear and then come back.
I think that would be enough right there. I love that. That I love. Great answer. Great on the spot magic. And I say they would hold you over their shoulders and they would bounce around like CP3O. So I think that would be awesome. Well, I tell you what, Jeff, this has been a very fun conversation, man. I tell you what, if you don't mind, before we get out of here, let the listeners know where they can learn more about Jeff Williams.
Well, I can be found at jeffwilliamsmagic.com, which is G-E-O-F-F, williamsmagic.com. You can find me all over YouTube. Got some interesting videos on there. One has over 3 million views where I pick myself up on my own head in an empty parking lot, okay. Which is kind of cool. It's called Heads Up. So look for Jeff Williams Heads Up. And you can find me on Facebook. And if you like, you know, if you can put up with a pun, original pun, every single day, you know, and go back and look at the old ones, you can look me up on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm hard to get rid of.
Just look for a man standing there with a palm in front of his face.
With somebody's hand in front of my face. Yeah.
There we go. Awesome, Jeff, man. This has been fun. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, man.
Well, thanks, Danny. I've had the best time, and you know, I really look forward to listening to your podcast and see, you know, who else you get on here, because this is wonderful.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Jeff Williams. I did. He's a very funny guy. I highly recommend you go follow him on social media. Those pictures are hilarious. You won't see his face, but I promise you'll laugh. And check out his website at geoffwilliamsmagic.com. Check him out. Also, guys, head on over to Patreon. Show the Abracadam Podcast some love. We could definitely use it. All the money goes towards this podcast as well. Also, if you have not done so, be sure to like, subscribe, follow the Abracadam Podcast. Anywhere it is you listen to podcasts, we are everywhere. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
It's awesome.
Can you please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party?